This week's mailbag comes to us from Beth. Dear Lisa, I have been making slow but steady progress in my home for over a year now. My husband and I have no children, and it is still amazing how you can fill up a house with things and paper that you don't need when you have plenty of room. I have been working on our home office since last January. We can finally see the floor. When a friend posted on Facebook that she was missing shifts at home because her internet service was disrupted, I offered the use of our office. When she decided to come over, it only took about 30 minutes to remove sensitive information from the office and make it ready for her to use. So far, she has only worked a single shift, but we expect her to be back for a few weeks. Thank you for helping me start on this journey to declutter and organize my home. I could never have offered the use of my home this time last year. Do you have an Organized 365 success story? If so, we would love to hear about it. Please send us an email at customerservice@organized365 and tell us how you have taken back your home, your paper, and your life with Organized 365.
Welcome to the Organized 365 podcast. I'm your host, professional organizer, productivity expert, and motivational speaker, Lisa Woodruff. This podcast will help you embrace progress over perfection and create lasting functional organizing in your home. I have so much to share with you, so let's get started. This is the second in a four-part series about discovering you. Like, who are you? I want to discover you. Last week, I really dove deep into the Kolbe assessment and how that really helps you understand how you process something from an idea to a finished project. How do you think? And then how do your family members think? How do your team members at work think? Like, how do your friends think? And when you can really start to discern and understand how people go from idea, something they want to happen, to that thing actually coming to fruition or being completed, we can give each other a lot of grace in the process it takes us in order to get to an end result. Now, I'm going to talk today about following your energy and intuition, and I've talked about these before, but I feel like this is becoming a bigger and bigger part of me and how I get things done, and I almost think like the whole world's paradigm shift is moving towards this idea of really following your energy more than following a tactical to-do list. And as I notice this, part of me thinks, how did I not know this 20 years ago, 30 years ago, 40 years ago? Why did I used to go from to-do list? Why did I seek out productivity tips and hacks and how to be more productive versus how to follow my energy? Why wasn't I thinking this way back then? And I don't think anybody was thinking this way back then. I think this is kind of an evolution of how to get things done, is to now follow your energy and intuition, whereas in the 80s, it was how to be more productive and time management. It's kind of like, you know, I follow Amanda Tress, I follow other people who are in the health and wellness industry, and they say to stop weighing yourself, like to not look at the number on the scale, that you can be, your body composition can be different with the same number on the scale. And just this morning, my husband said the same thing to me. He said, oh my gosh, I was following this person and they showed a picture of like this weight can look this way, flabby and fat, and it can look this way, fit and lean, but it's the same number on the scale. And I thought, okay, this is another idea that we didn't have in the 80s, and now we have it today. And I heard it 18 months ago from Amanda Tress, and I've been kind of thinking, yeah, there are some days where the number seems higher on the scale, but I feel lean, and other days where the number seems lower on the scale, and I feel like a beached whale. Like, and so maybe the number on the scale isn't an accurate reflection of how healthy my body is and, you know, what I'm doing right or wrong with my nutrition. Interestingly, that 18 months later, my husband has the same idea. So I feel like there are ideas that kind of progress through society, and we start to, some people are ahead of the curve and they're sharing these ideas before anybody understands what they're talking about. And then it just becomes something like, oh yeah, that makes sense that, you know, you could have two different people that weigh 150 pounds and they will look completely different, even though they both are going to step on the scale and it's going to be 150, 200, 250, whatever the weight is going to be. It's going to look different for different body types. And I'm sure 5 years, 10 years, 15 years from now, we're going to find out that that is the combination of macronutrients that you use. It might have something to do with your blood type. It might have something to do with your ethnicity. It might have something to do with the health of your family members generations past that has passed. I don't know, but I'm sure 30 years from now, all of those things will be revealed. And then we'll wonder back in the 2020s why we thought it had anything to do with, I don't know, however we're exercising and getting healthy today. So I want to talk to you about this idea of following your energy, and I'm going to throw intuition in there because I think that you have to learn to hear your inner voice, which is what I call my intuition, like that idea, okay, you've all had this experience, every single one of us. Sometime in your school career, you were taking a test and you went to answer a question and you thought, no, that can't possibly be the right answer. And you picked a different answer on the test and got it wrong because you were right the first time. That's your intuition. That just gut knowing that, like, offhanded, like, oh, that's the right answer. And then you start to think about it and you're like, well, that doesn't make any sense. Like, okay, I hadn't thought about the fact that I can weigh the same on the scale, but my pants fit differently. So maybe it's not the weight on the scale. Like, intuitively, you probably already had that thought before I started the podcast with it. And now you're going, oh yeah, I thought that like 5 or 6 years ago that I would have lean days and days where I didn't feel as lean and the number on the scale was the same. Okay, so I intuitively knew that it was something else. This idea of following your energy, I think, blends with this idea of trusting your intuitive gut, like trusting your first answer on the test. You're not always going to know why. Like, you're not always going to know why you think you should go the long way home versus the short way home. Have you ever done that? And you get home and you find out that there was a huge accident that way and like something just told you to go the other way. That's your intuition. Like, I don't know how to explain it. I'm not a theologian. I'm not a psychologist. They both have theories. I just know that maybe we have a little bit more knowledge inside of us than we believe. But we all understand energy. We all understand when we wake up and we've slept 10 hours and we're still exhausted, or we only had 3 hours of sleep and we feel like we can run a marathon. Like, we understand mental energy, physical energy, like when your spiritual energy is on or when it is off, when your relational energy is firing on all cylinders, or you just don't even want to say hi to anybody, but you have plenty of energy. You want to go run a marathon, but you don't want to talk to anybody while you're doing it. We have all of these different kinds of energies. And so I'm going to tell you a couple of stories where along the way I've gotten insights about when I should follow my intuition or follow energy so that maybe you could discover a little bit more about your energy. I know that when you have a chronic condition, when you are diagnosed with something, which a lot of my female friends have been diagnosed with these rare and ununderstandable conditions that just zap them of their energy. And it's just so bizarre. And they're so frustrated. So you know what it means to have like zero energy. I have some friends that literally do not get out of bed ever. Like, that is zero physical energy. But yet they have mental energy. So I want you really to be thinking about all different kinds of energy. I know it was a while ago on the podcast. I have no idea when. But I talked about when I worked with a client actually in Germany who did a virtual coaching call with me back when I did that back in the day. And she was mostly bound in a bed in her family room. And she would have help that came to the house and they would do things for her. We really talked about how can you use that 2 hours worth of help that you get to do all of the physical energy possible, because her mental energy, she had plenty of mental energy, but walking to the kitchen and back was like, would be all the physical energy that she had for the entire day. So instead of having that person sit there and fold all of the laundry and put everything away and do all these things, we set up all of these systems to use that same 2 hours worth of time to do as much physical energy as possible so that she could do mental energy while the person wasn't there. So one of the examples was she had boxes and boxes and boxes of paper in her basement. And I said, great, every single time your help comes, after you've gone through a box of paper, you have it sorted, they shred it, they move it wherever it goes, and they always have three more boxes in your family room for you, and they put one on your bed. So that every day she could physically go through and mentally go through a box of paper, but she could never have gotten the box of paper out of the basement or even gotten it from, you know, the wall over to her bed. And this just became part of her caretaker's routine to just move a couple of banker's boxes, which was no big deal for the caretaker. And in order to get that time, what we did was we had all the socks and underwear didn't get folded by the caretaker. They just got put in a small laundry basket on the bed. She could easily match the socks and underwear and fold those and use the time to have the banker's box moved, things like that. So how do you, which energy is highest, mental, physical, emotional, spiritual, relational, which energies are lowest? And how do you use your highest energies to bring up your lowest energies? Similar to what we talked about last week in your cognition, like how you think. Talking energy, that's how I process. That's how I decide if an idea is even worth doing the research and organization to get it done. I could easily abandon an idea anywhere in the talking energy before I move my team into full execution. So this idea of energy. Now, I was listening to a podcast that referenced this book, The Power of Full Engagement by Jim Lehrer and Tony Schwartz. And The Power of Full Engagement, it's a book about these coaches that work with business owners and other people who have need to reorganize their energy, basically. I was like, oh, I am all in on this book. So I got the book, I listened to it on Audible, and then I also bought the physical copy. I do that a lot. I've done that. You know when I started doing that? In the pandemic. I used to have a different Audible book and a different physical book. And now, for the life of me, I cannot read a physical book. Like, since the pandemic started, I sit down and like, no. I just, everything is a podcast or Audible now. Everything. And you know what? I talked to a couple of other people who used to be avid readers like me, and they are the same. They're not physically reading books either. I just wonder if we just don't have that reading energy right now. If we're doing a lot of mental gymnastics for our businesses and things like that. So interesting, just side note. But I noticed when I stopped buying the physical books, meaty books like this, like The Power of Full Engagement, listening to the audiobook, I wanted to be able to go back and reference certain pieces and parts. And so I'm actually looking at the graph they have on page 6, which talks about the old paradigm and the new paradigm. When we're talking about full engagement, like living full out, living your full purpose. And there are 5 different old paradigm versus new paradigms that I just want to make you aware of so you can do some more research and see if you're noticing that these things have changed in your life like they've changed in mine. The old paradigm is that we should manage time. Like we need to manage time, increase productivity, track our time, come up with, task stacking like I do. And the new paradigm is managing your energy. And I have done a lot of podcasts and share a lot of ways where we can get more done in less time, especially at home and in our work with our Friday work boxes. But after reading this, I thought, oh my gosh, that is exactly what I have done. Over time, I'm a super, super productive person. I get a ton of things done. But I've noticed more and more lately, I've just decided to delete things entirely versus figuring out how to do them faster. And I encourage you, as you're going through your days and weeks and months in your house, what can you just eliminate altogether that doesn't even need to be done anymore? Like, I don't mend clothes anymore. I don't iron anything anymore. But 20 years ago, I ironed almost everything, and I mended all of our clothes. Now, on occasion, once or twice a year, I will take a couple of things to a seamstress and have her, you know, sew the button on or fix the hem or do whatever, but very rarely. My clothes are not that valuable. I mean, they're nice, but they're not bazillion dollar nice. And so usually by the time my clothes need to be mended or fixed, I've worn them out. You watch me on Instagram. I wear the same clothes all the time. I actually was looking back through my Instagram feed to see, you know, like, I don't know what I was looking at. I was like, oh, well, clearly you like the navy and red striped turtleneck that you got, Lisa, because like it's in every single picture. Because I only have like 6 outfits that I've worn this entire winter, And so those are the six outfits that you've seen me in for the last 4 months. They're still nice clothes. I will probably wear them a little bit next year, but I get bored, so I'll probably get a different turtleneck next year. And that was a nice turtleneck I bought. It was Tommy Hilfiger. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to get a Tommy Hilfiger turtleneck. I think it was on sale for $40, which is a lot of money for a turtleneck. Do you know how much I've worn that turtleneck? You guys know exactly the one I'm talking about if you follow me on any social media at all. I've probably worn it at least 20 times. So that turtleneck cost me $2 per wearing. So if it gets a stain on it, how much time am I going to spend fixing that turtleneck that I've definitely gotten good use out of? I'll just move it along. Like it served me for a time. I'll move it along. I won't necessarily mend it. Another one is the sock basket. I just did it last week. I declare sock amnesty about twice a year. When the matches no longer match in the socks, we all do our own laundry now. We move it on downstairs. Like, I just throw them away. They all got thrown away. There are 20 mismatched socks that for whatever reason, their pairs went somewhere else, and I just got rid of them. I know Greg and I match our socks, so if our socks are in there, like the other one had a hole in it, like Greg has started this thing that if he puts a sock on, it has a hole in it, he throws one of them away. Like, whatever. You know, everybody's got their own ideas of what they do with their own socks, and we're all adults, and so everybody can do their own thing. But I'll tell you this, twice a year, there are none in my laundry room because I throw them away. Because it is draining for me to see a basket of mismatched socks. It drains my energy. I want to match them. About once a month, I will try to match the socks that are in the mismatched sock thing. It's just, it takes a lot of energy. When it is empty, it doesn't take my energy anymore. So managing your energy versus managing your time. Are there any things that you are doing in your day, in your daily routine personally, in your kitchen, in your laundry, in your housework, that maybe don't need to be done anymore so that you can use that energy, the mental energy of it, and the physical energy to do something else? So managing your energy is the new, I think we're going to be hearing a lot more about this and a lot less about productivity and doing more in less time. I also feel like the pandemic accelerated all of these things I'm going to talk about, just like it accelerated everything in business. And it accelerated a lot of the things that were naturally occurring. It squished the timeline. Some are saying even 10 years. Like, we are thinking about things now that we would not have actually implemented in our homes and our lives for 10 years. But because of the pandemic, we're thinking much differently about everything, just everything. And so the next time when you say you don't have enough time to yourself mentally, ask yourself, is it that you don't have enough time or you don't have enough energy for the amount of time that these things are going to take? Interestingly, in the interview, and I cannot remember, you guys know I listen to way too many podcasts where I heard them review The Power of Full Engagement. They were talking to, I think, Daniel Pink. And Daniel Pink has a book, and he was talking about energy on a podcast. And this is something I have been doing for the last 10 years. I thought I was a little bit crazy when I did it. And then when I heard that it's an actual thing, I was like, okay, I have to tell you that this is actually what I do. So Daniel Pink said there's this thing called a nappuccino. A nappuccino. He said, if you're really tired, and this is pretty much how I got through all of my early 40s and creating Organized 365 with doing in-home organization and everything, is I would do these things called a nappuccino. I would come home from organizing. It would usually be 3 or 4 o'clock. I would make myself a coffee. I would drink the coffee. I would like pound the coffee and just down it. And then I would lay down for a 20-minute nap. Now, I'm the kind of person who has always been able to fall asleep and wake up from like an 18 to 20-minute nap. I feel like I'm not falling asleep. And then all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's 20 minutes later and I've had this great little nap. And that worked great in my 20s and 30s. I mean, even the kids, like I would put them down for a nap. I'd take a 20-minute nap. But then in my 40s, like I would take a 40-minute nap or I'd be exhausted. So I tried this one day and it worked. And this was the new thing that I did in my early 40s. I would have a coffee, a Keurig coffee. I would take my 20-minute nap. By the time my 20-minute nap kicked in, so did the caffeine. And boy, was I ready to handle that end of the day. It's a real thing, you guys. It's called a nappuccino. So I don't do it very often now. I don't have a lot of household responsibilities in the evening, but boy, it really, really helped me when I did. So that's another way that I get more energy. Okay, another idea from The Power of Full Engagement about the old paradigm versus the new paradigm. The old paradigm is life is a marathon. Like we're in this marathon and we just, you know, we're going on this marathon and we need to keep going. And the new paradigm is life is a season of sprints. I can completely relate to this. Like I used to think like you're born, you live this life, you die. It's one big marathon. We just keep going. And now I don't know, again, if it's the changing of energy as we're evolving or if it's my age or whatever, but I run my entire life in sprints. I do the 120-day sprint at home, and every 120 days, I hit all the different areas of my house. I don't do all 100 days anymore. My house is pretty organized, but there'll definitely be a week early in the 120 days and a week later in the 120 days. And that first week, I focus on my bedroom, bathroom, closet, and kitchen. And the second week, which I just finished it, I'll do the laundry room and all the living spaces, and I'll dive into the storage room and the garage. And I definitely, 3 times a year, hit those areas in my house. I have this like sprint. And as I go through there, I'm not saying, how do I want to change my home for the rest of my life? I just say to myself, okay, the next time I'm going to hit this is about 4 months from now. What needs to be done between now and 4 months from now? And are there any improvements I need to make? Is there anything I'm tolerating that I want to change? Is there any life stage that's changing? Are there any kids moving in, moving out? You know, what do we need this space to function for in the next 4 months? In my business, I used to plan 18 months, 3 years, you know, here's where I want to go. And I would give little projects to the team. I'd be like this project and then this project. And we'd build project after project after project. Now we have a more seasoned team. I'm a more seasoned CEO. We do quarterly meetings. We do quarterly conversations where everybody understands if their role is changing in the company. We set goals that we call rocks, and we do those every 12 weeks. And everyone in the company knows what we're doing as our rocks. If there are any projects that are related to the rock or one-off projects that will be done in those 12 weeks, it's all fleshed out in an online spreadsheet that we have that our entire company has access to. And everyone knows what we're doing in this next sprint. And I have become way more disciplined in going ahead and thinking about the next quarter and the quarter and the quarter after that and finding all the research and interviewing people and, getting quotes about what I want to do next without having my team pivot to what we're doing next. My team is working in the current quarter. I am living in the next quarter, and I'm looking at them as sprints. Like, what do we need to get done here? Okay, so that we can get this, so that we can get this. I'm not looking at it as a marathon because the course changes. I mean, the pandemic changes everybody's course, right? Like, no one, even businesses that are still profitable, didn't make changes because of the pandemic. We all made changes because of the pandemic. Even how we work. You know, we had everyone in office. When the pandemic is ultimately totally over, not everyone's coming back to the office full time. I'm fine with that. It's going to be 2 days in, 3 days at home. And some people will be all days in and some people will be all days at home. And we're much more flexible than we were before the pandemic, right? So I definitely, definitely look at my life and I look at my business as a series of sprints and not a marathon. And when you think about the energy of a marathon, the energy of a marathon, not that I've ever run one, walked one, or even driven one. Like my husband ran one in DC and I got on the bus and I went to all the little places to like cheer him on. But no. I would love to do a couple 5Ks, walking of course, but no, I've never done a marathon. But as far as I have observed people doing marathons, marathon energy is, you know, you do a lot of training for a marathon. You have to work your way up to that ability to do that length of time walking or running at one time without a break. You need to fuel your body differently for a marathon than you do for a sprint. You have to eat certain foods before the race, certain foods after the race, certain foods during the race, at certain intervals, a certain amount of liquids. You need to have medical staff on standby when you're running the marathon. You should be checked with a doctor before you run marathons, before you embark on something like that. Like, and there's so much planning that goes into a marathon, and you're planning, and then you run this one, and then you start over for the next one. A sprint is a totally different energy. A sprint doesn't require as much preparation. Now, if you're going to win sprints, it might require more preparation, but to run a sprint, for me to do a 5K, I could do a 5K tomorrow. I haven't done any practice, but I walk about 3 miles per hour. So what, it's going to take me an hour. I could do a 5K and I'll walk it in about an hour. I don't need to do a lot more planning. My friends could say, we want to do one next weekend. I just check and see if I'm available. I'm available. Okay, we can do it. And you could do a sprint this weekend and next weekend, and then not the weekend after that. You don't have to do a sprint every single weekend. Like, once you start marathon training, it's for this marathon. And if that date gets moved, your training gets moved. It's just a whole different energy, a whole different thought process to be able to do sprints. And if you look at your house as doing, you know, the 100-day sprint and then the next sprint and then the next sprint, you pick and choose which days you want to do, which days don't you want to do. You wake up on a Saturday morning, and for whatever reason, your family has gone somewhere else, or you find yourself at home for the day, and the birds are singing, the sun is out, you've had a great night's sleep. Like, go with that sprint energy. Like, throw open all the windows, vacuum the carpets, clean out everything, take it all to the curb or to the donation center or whatever you want to do. Like, follow that energy and go ahead and do that sprint without worrying about the whole long, drawn-out saga of how organized or disorganized your house has been in the past, current, future, for the next millennium. Like, just go with today. Just run the sprint of organizing your house today. Another paradigm is that downtime in the past was looked at as wasted time. Downtime today is looked at as productive time. I'm not very good at this one. I often see downtime as wasted time because I like to always be doing something. I like to have my hands busy. I'm the person watching a movie that's actually doing a puzzle and not looking at the screen. I was the person in your college class that was needlepointing in the back row because I always have my hands busy when I'm doing something. But I am learning and changing my paradigm shift to this idea that downtime is productive time. It can be productive thinking time. It's the time when your brain is allowed to assimilate different experiences that you've had through the weeks and make those connections. So I'm working on that one personally. The old paradigm is that rewards fuel performance. The new paradigm is that purpose fuels performance. Oh my goodness, I see this in business everywhere. Again, I'll go all the way back to the 80s. If you think back to the 80s and the TV shows and the movies that were on in the 80s, it was all about yuppies, young urban professionals, and bonuses and BMWs and options and stock options. That's not what drives people today. If you're a business owner, if you're a manager, you know, or even yourself, when you think about your employment, it's not all about the money. It's not all about the bonuses. The number one thing that people say they want in their jobs and the reason they're leaving one job for another job is not the benefit package or the dollars that they're earning. They want to feel like they're part of something that has meaning, that they're making a difference, that the work they're doing has purpose. This completely has changed. And when you think of this kind of energy, like, you can get excited about working at a nonprofit that really is doing something that you're passionate about, instead of staying in a corporate job that you've had forever where you have, you know, 5 weeks vacation and a bonus and a 401k and all these things. And there is definitely this energetic shift right now from rewards to purpose. Just something to think about. And then the last one is that the old paradigm is self-discipline rules, and the new paradigm is that rituals rule. Here's another one I've talked about a lot. I am a very self-disciplined person. I always have been. And I am able to say I'm going to do something and stick to it. And I know that that ability to hold yourself accountable is not something that everyone has naturally. I think I kind of have it naturally. So being self-disciplined is something that I'm fairly good at. But I totally recognize that even in the podcast I've shared with you in the last 3 years, and in my own personal life, it's not about self-discipline anymore. It is all about rituals, or I call them routines. your life is based on the habits that you do. Like, I love the book, The Slight Edge. In The Slight Edge, they talk about the only difference between one person and another person 10 years from now are the habits that they do. Which, yes, it takes some self-discipline to start habits, but really starting habits is more of a mental game in figuring out what are the habits you want to have and setting yourself up for success. So, for example, with food, for me, because health is one of the things that I'm working on, if I plan out the day before what I want to eat, how many steps I'm going to walk, if I'm going to walk on the treadmill, not walk on the treadmill, then I'm more likely to actually follow that plan. If I wake up in the morning, it doesn't matter how much energy I have, I'm always going to want to go get onion rings and do a puzzle. I'm not necessarily going to want to get up, walk on the treadmill, you see what I'm saying? But once you get used to getting up and walking on the treadmill every single Saturday, then it becomes something you do. On Saturday, mom gets on the treadmill and sings at the top of her lungs all of her embrace songs, and the family laughs at her. And it's fun. It's a whole new thing that the family gets to do with me. But that's a new ritual that I've started. I'm not really good at walking on the treadmill any other day of the week, but I have done it about a month in a row of Saturdays, and that seems to really work for me. Greg goes to the grocery store every Saturday. There are things that you just do. And once you make it something that is part of your weekly routine or your daily routine and becomes kind of a habit, it's much, much easier to keep doing that thing than if you're just trying to require your self-discipline to do that for you. Creating habits, adding to your habits, task stacking your habits are what will make changes 3, 5, and 10 years down the road that last. And so that was just another thing that I wanted to share with you. So today we learned about your energy. Where does energy come from? What did it look like 10, 20, 30 years ago? What is it kind of evolving into today? I wanted to give you a bunch of different examples in my own life and in your life so you could kind of see where these changes might be occurring in your life. And for me, the biggest thing I want to leave you with is I used to plan out my entire schedule of everything I was going to do for the week for work or for home. And then I would get to that thing on my to-do list and I just didn't have the energy to do it. Sometimes I did it anyway. Sometimes you just need to do it anyway. But other times I would say to myself, I'll do that when I have the right energy. Recording podcasts is one of those things. I do not record podcasts if I don't have the energy to do it, even if it's on my calendar to do. I will keep pushing it until I have the energy to record the podcasts because they will be 10 times better when I have the energy and I'm in the right frame of mind to record a podcast. All right, next week is part 3 in our series of Discovering You. I'll see you next week.